when you get to the studio levels, that they're clearly making the kinds of budgets that will enable people to have decent working wages, or that they can have a normal work-life balance. The issue is that they refuse to allow for that because they're trying to save money.
That came in all sorts of traffic. I have no idea what you just said, so I'm gonna.
Oh, it's okay. Okay, I just stopped it. Kelly says, Nikki, you better show that your face. Because you're right.
I'm like, yeah. Hey, did you turn off the? Did you happen to turn off the camera on Zoom?
Yeah, I just turned off the camera. Yeah.
Are you sure?
I turned it back off. Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm still seeing you, and I can't even hear you in Zoom.
Oh, it's probably slow to react, but it's definitely says.
Okay. Now I can hear you. Now.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Keep talking.
Yeah, Kelly says because. We love you, Nikki.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Are you ready to do this?
Yes.
I love you, Kelly.
Wow. All right.
Nikki
okay.
says she loves you very much.
Great.
Let's do it.
Wow. All right. This is not good. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Get Realism Podcast. I am Madam Chase Rennie.
I'm Christine Chen, and I'm in a place that doesn't have, well, has Wi-Fi, but we don't know the password, so I'm on Nikki's hotspot. So this should be interesting, because if we go on video, then you can't hear anything. So now it's just my voice, and hopefully it works. Is it working?
Yeah. But cool. It's all sorts of choppy. I made out what you said sort of on Instagram. I don't know if you can hear me. I don't know if I'm on.
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly.
But we're both on a real delay. But it's fine.
I can
fine.
Hear you perfectly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, like she said, we're having a little bit of audio issues, but that's a motif in this podcast. Is audio issues. That's what that's our bread and butter the last 50 episodes. So if you guys are new to this podcast, I'm sorry if the audio is just absolutely just crazy, but we're doing our absolute best. We're using some tinfoil internet, ladies and gentlemen. It's not like my internet is any
using
better.
Using our phone internet. That's why.
Yeah.
Phone hotspot.
Exactly. So this is our show, ladies and gentlemen. How's everything with you, Christine?
It's good. We just got off of an overnight. So it's actually more of a split. The problem was PAs live like 2 hours away from the set. And Nikki, who is my second, and I, of course, we're too nice, let's just say that, and we were like, hey, yeah, sure, you can go home early. We're way too nice. Yeah, stupidly nice. And so it was Nikki and I paying everything, and so yeah, by the time we got back it was like 5-ish basically. So yeah, I mean, and we were at like 2. There was a moment yesterday where we were dumping the trash at the dumpster, and this dumpster is very high. We're at home and there's cabinets, right? The top of the cabinets. So Nikki, the problem was it was completely full. And I don't think this location is used to this amount of trash. When you're working in a production, the amount of trash that is generated from production is astronomical, which is really sad. Another topic in itself. But Nikki had to hoist me onto her shoulders. This is two of us. At night, I think it was clocked at 3:15, 3:30 a.m. I was sitting on her shoulders. She hoisted me, and I had to like climb whatever footing I had to get to the top of the dumpster so I could open the top of it so that the trash had a way to kind of like pop up so we could continue to stuff more trash into the dumpster. Yeah, or it wouldn't, nothing would fit basically. So this was at us at 3:15 a.m. in the morning. I wish there was security cam footage somewhere. We really would like VCU Rice. If any of you guys have security footage around the dumpster area
at 3:15
a.m. yesterday, this morning, we would love to watch ourselves be really stupid. So we're like, you know what? We work way too hard. We're overachievers. Sure, we could have just left the trash out and then animals would have eaten it. But we did it. I know we could have told the PAs they couldn't go home, but no. But we were too nice. And instead I got hoisted on Nikki's shoulders and almost climbed into a dumpster to open the top of it up. So that was my night/morning. So we got back and had to do all the things, you know, put the food back in the refrigerators, make sure the coolers were closed, and the truck, Nikki had to drive the truck because our PA that would normally drive the truck wasn't there, and it was a whole thing. But this cannot compare to what happened the day before that, which was when the entire day we had zero PAs because two of our PAs had emergencies all at the same time. Two. And so the entire day, it was me and Nikki setting up tents, moving the tents. I was still ADing. Then we had a COVID scare. So we, Nikki and I and COVID officer administered rapid tests, COVID rapid tests. Yeah. This is like the day we had, the day before. We did it all. We served food as well. And then got yelled at by the first AC because of an unrelated issue. Yeah. Okay. So no, he was frustrated with production, which unfortunately the production is directed towards us, but it means the producers, but he was just mad because rightfully so. They hadn't had the DIT interconnect with the on-site editor. So they hadn't been able to have the cards double checked through the editing program to make sure like, hey, nothing's corrupted. They like copied the card over, but that's not enough because sometimes you can dump a card and if it's not a perfect transfer, it can be corrupted. And so even if you back up that card, it would just be a corrupted card backed up several times. So nothing had been backed up or nothing had been spot checked. And they apparently had asked multiple times for this to happen. And seeing our DIT, who I asked to help me with PA duties, just set them off basically. So
yeah,
it's fine. Nikki and I were like, do you see what we're doing? We're doing all the jobs right now.
Wearing all the hats. It's just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's another day on the job.
Oh yeah. So it's been, honestly, besides that, it's been a great crew, really nice people. Surprisingly, the shots have been cool. It's been a neat location. I think that's the fun part about filmmaking is like all the places that you don't necessarily would go to if you weren't filming, you know, so you get to see these things. Like I would never imagine that I would be in Urbana. I call it Urbana, but Nikki says it's Urbana. But Urbana sounds better, or Urbana.
It's not like my mother.
Virginia.
It sounds better. Yeah. I'm gonna make up the pronunciations here.
Urbana, Virginia. I would never be in, I don't know where we are right now. We're not in Richmond. We're very close to Richmond, but not in Richmond at her aunt's house. So, yeah. How was your week? What's new with you?
Nothing. I mean, nothing really, really absolutely crazy. Actually, no, the only crazy thing is that, like, I'm trying to, like, me and my neighbors are trying to nab this fucker who stole packages the other day. And I had a package.
Oh, no.
That was here. And it was like a, it was another microphone, but it was also like another, like, it was another like XLR cable. And it was another, because I wanted to get an additional mic. And it was all in a box, and literally Amazon gave me a notification that, oh, it arrived. It's here. And then I go outside and I'm like, it's not here. And then I look around and then I saw the Amazon box just fully open, just cracked open. And there was nothing inside. Like, none of my shit was inside, like, at all. This guy literally cracked open my fucking package, took off, and then apparently stole other packages just along the fucking neighborhood. And so me and like two other neighbors just down the street from me are trying to find this asshole. This happened like Saturday night and or like Saturday afternoon. Yeah, it was like Saturday afternoon. Yeah. And some asshole just robbed us. It wasn't like hundreds of dollars, but you know, it was a good chunk of change though. It was a mic, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. And, you know, and then also, ladies and gentlemen, make sure, like, you have insurance on your home and shit like that, especially when it comes to people stealing packages, because I learned this the hard way. Apparently, like, I have to file this claim, and it won't even, like, Amazon literally told me, they're like, oh, we might not even address it from 3 to 6 months. So, like, they might not even, like, get around to my claim probably for months before I can get my whatever, however much I paid back. You know, it was just like, it was just such a toss up. But then somebody told me like, oh, you just have to like send them an email. And I sent them like two emails. And then one of them said that they'll look into it. And then the other one just like redirects me to another person. What'd you say?
Yeah.
Just ignore me. Just like redirecting me somewhere else. And it's just like, okay. At least the first guy was just like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, packages are stolen all the time. And I'm just like, thanks for the fact. Like,
I wish there was some sort of like, the process is so difficult. There's no really repercussion to any of this.
No.
You know, like, it's extremely difficult to catch people who do it, and it's honestly not really worth the police's time tracking the person down. So it's almost like a free-for-all for everybody, which really blows, because then it's like, unless you have an actual mailbox, you pretty much are guaranteed to have your stolen mailbox.
Yeah, I mean,
or you tell them like special place to put it or whatever, or you mail it to a friend's place that has a mailbox.
Yeah, no, like I was just absolutely frustrated with the whole entire ordeal and stuff. I just thought like maybe like Amazon hadn't like an insurance policy for Amazon Prime member. I don't know. It was, yeah. I'm an idiot too, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think these things through. I don't think about my bag getting stolen.
I think you just, you're not an idiot. You just, this is not something you plan for, because and that's human nature. People don't expect it depends on your personality. There's also the people who are just negative in general, but Learn Filmmaking is on our podcast. That's good. In general, I think people just assume, people are going to steal my package. I mean, like, even having a Ring thing, see the person, but like, what next? Like, police aren't going to go and be like, oh, I know that person, you know? So it's stupid. The Ring is more of a deterrent. I think it's more of a placebo than anything.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, like I said, like I was frustrated, and I'm over it now. Because you know, shit just happens, and I mean, I can get all butthurt about it all I want. It's not going to change anything. Right. So, but I am curious. So, like, my neighbors are curious as well. We're like, we kind of like want to investigate this shit. Just be like, hopefully, this fool doesn't come around. Because if he comes around, shit, yeah. Dude. It's about to be game over. But yeah, and also as a result of that, I got a Ring camera.
Oh, okay.
And I put it on yesterday.
Okay.
And the fucker sends me notifications like every 10 goddamn minutes. Like it would be just like leaves blowing and shit like that, or some sort of like we have a neighborhood cat that just walks by, and it just alarms me. It's just like there's movement detected in the Ring camera, and I'm like, fuck. And then I just look at it, and it's just a cat just chilling right next to the door, just staring at my camera, you know. I'm like, Jesus Christ. So you know, I mean,
there's got to be a way to like customize it a bit better so that it doesn't
notification all the time. I went on YouTube. I went like a deep rabbit hole of like Ring cameras and like surveillance cameras in general, like for, you know, home use and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was truly fascinating, but like, there's so many goddamn ways of just like, oh yeah, you can calibrate the camera to do this. And then like, it'll only detect like, you know, figures of this purport, whatever. It's a long convoluted thing, but I set it up, and like it's just like I'm still getting notifications on my phone. Like every time I'm looking here, I'll see like a notification pop up on my phone, and it says that someone's in front of your house right now. And I'm just like, stop it! I know no one because my front door is literally right here behind this wall. So I'm like, I can hear somebody behind this wall. Don't give me that shit, Ring camera. I know it's just leaves blowing or the cat. we can talk about the I had it all logged, but talking about the thing that's going on in filmmaking right now, the whole the strike. Yes. Do you want to get into it?
I wish I knew more about. I only have theories.
Me too.
So I know. So right now, if you don't know, which you'd be living on a rock if you didn't know, but there is a motion to get votes from IATSE, which is the union for filmmakers, most filmmaking positions. It's not the only one. There's IATSE. There's DGA. There's SAG. IATSE is the one where the non like AD portion, the directors and stuff, DGA, there's PGA, but everybody else is in basically IATSE. And they are wanting to essentially ask for better, shorter work regulated. Oh, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Nikki's friend.
How are you?
I'm good. Yes. Nice to meet you.
Oh,
sorry. So it's better regulated.
With weekends film off, right?
Settings, basically. Yeah, it was. I don't know if it was necessary. Yeah, it was like weekends off or at least 2 days off type thing, and then definitely was it was the length of time for the days. So instead of right now it's pretty 12-hour days, but to go more 10 hours or even skew towards 8, like everybody else in the world has an eight-hour work day, and then just stricter regulations on like overnights and how many you can have, those just things like that. Let's pull that up because that is pretty important.
Yeah, I was trying to find it.
I'm getting a lot of questions.
Do you have it on your Facebook?
Let me find it. IOTC strike.
Because somebody reposted it, and it was really like it broke it all down. It was beautiful, and I
don't
remember, and I wish I saved it.
Artist IOTC strike explained. Let me see if I can find it. But yeah, it's between the IOTC and Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. And their problems are excessive, unsafe, and harmful working hours, wages for the lowest paid crafts, and consistent failure during breaks based on all this. So that's basically the higher level breakdown of it. I'm sure there's specifics. But I think how it will affect everybody is that and a lot of my friends who are asking her are non-union people. And it's having a standard. And non-union jobs they try their best to follow union, right? Because a lot of the people who do work for the non-unions projects, especially if you're a right to work state like Virginia, like Texas and Louisiana and stuff like that. So it is to production, they should go by the union standards, which they'll get that level of quality of people who would otherwise work for union. And so where I see it changing is that more union sets will be forced to abide by the same standards as union projects.
Muted. But I agree. And for those of you who miss it on Facebook, we're just talking about the strike that's happening. And we'll add a link to all this because it does truly affect every filmmaker, you know, who was trying to chase a filmmaking career. This just sort of like gives us a little bit of a workable hours, a workable life, a healthy lifestyle, a work life too.
Work life balance or whatever that is.
Yeah,
you know?
Under the balance of just 8 to 10 hours. You know, which is typical in any like
corporate any work setting,
any workforce situation, right? Corporation. But before then, you know, for those who don't know, if this was a problem in the first place, kind of was because, like, there were certain sets that are like the standard was 12 hours, quote unquote, right? And there's definitely plenty of filmmakers, especially independent sets, that go way past 12 hours. And some filmmakers abuse it. Now, is that something, you know, we agree with? You know, no, but it does happen. And it's not usually any one person's fault, too, because there could be an amalgamation of problems, situations that arise.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, shooting days were pretty wide, pretty big, and the resting time was very small. So this just helps us
regulate a little bit. It just gives it a little bit of a better standard, and everybody looks to that standard as the anchor. I guess that's the way to think about it, is that the standard that everybody else is doing it is the anchor, and then whether or not people stick to that or it's better or it's close enough, like, is, but at least there's an anchor. And if that anchor is already unreasonable, then that only exacerbates other non-union sets to be even worse.
Right.
So yeah, and I think the big thing too in this instance is that there is no excuse at that budget level. Like when you get to the studio level, so they're clearly making the kinds of budgets that will enable people to have decent working wages or that they can have a normal work-life balance. The issue is that they refuse to allow for that because they're trying to save money. And I mean, there's this fine line because at a certain point, when you're an independent film, you actually are super limited by your resources and you aren't making any money. And like distribution is may or may not be there. So there's like, there's not a, there, it's the fact that there's these gigs that have, that we know these studios are making a certain cap of money and still refuse to treat their workers right is the fundamental problem that filmmakers, crew, cast are fighting for. So, but I mean, Get Realism's eye, we support anyone who is going in for the fight with IATSE. We stand with IATSE. It is just because we're an industry that we love, that's the danger of it, is that it is so easy for people to prey upon those who are passionate about what they do, because they will take more shit for the sacrifice of being able to do what they love, which is not,
because these companies, these streaming platforms, they're not worried about one particular filmmaker and their bright ideas. They're more worried about the quantity that's going to push their streaming platform, quote unquote, the best of the best, you know, which, you know, there's plenty of great content on every single streaming platform. The fact that we have this, you know, this crazy like influx of just people hammering out sets left and right. I love seeing work happening regardless, no matter what, but it's a little also frightening that, like, you know, some of the conditions that we also have to work in as well, you know, which is, you know, for lack of a better term, unfair, you know, sometimes, not all the time. There's definitely plenty of filmmakers who have very fair standards, especially going into like first day of production all the way through to the last day. You know, there's plenty of that, but you know, there's definitely, like Christine said, lots of
people advantages take being advantage. Taken.
You yeah, know, by some I think of these
that's
people.
That's what the standard is. Why there are unions, why there is IATSE and EGA and all that stuff, is that it's regulated. And it's to prevent, it's still going to happen, but at least there's a standard that helps to protect people who are in this industry, who are doing it because they love it and might be taken advantage because they are pursuing a dream, you know, more willing to take more of a sacrifice because it's for the dream, you know? And so that's the hard part with like anything that's art, music related, is that it's not seen, it is not an essential industry per se. Like, we're not going to die. Our souls might, but like, it's not, we'll be okay technically if there wasn't, you know, or there weren't.
Yeah, you can make the same argument with music too.
People just can't. Right, exactly. And people can't see past that. They see that, oh, well, because you're not a essential industry, then why should you get paid well for that? You know, it's always hard for people to quantify art. It's such a subjective thing, you know? And it's because of that, the value of it is so skewed all over the place that it's hard for people to put a price point to it or validate paying people properly. And so that's why there's these, why they're the unions and everything. But for my friends who are in, like me, who are non-union, I know you guys are concerned about like, how is that going to affect jobs right now going forward, industry. Like, legally speaking, if you're in a, especially in your right to work state, working on a non-union job is you, it continues as the same. It's not going to affect you in any way.
what it will affect is if you're on a union gig that's with like IOTC or whatever, then when the strike goes into effect, because it hasn't yet, it's only a vote right now. IOTC is asking for a vote from the members to see there's a majority. If there's a majority, then they will go into strike. So if there is a strike, then it just means that the jobs that would have been supported by the union will stop. And the studios decide to hire, you know, and go around the backs of union workers and hire people to keep the production running, then those are the people who get in trouble, or what we say, blacklisted or treated as scabs, because they're preventing progress for the union. So, but yeah, it shouldn't affect, that's my understanding, is for those who are non-union, this just sets we're just changing the rules for the standards and hoping for that. And if it goes into effect and is successful, then what we will see, maybe not immediately, but as years to come, people will stop thinking, oh, having 15-hour days or 12-hour days is normal. They will now know that, oh, a workday should legally be 10 hours. And then that will trickle down into all the smaller independent films. So it'll be a positive all around.
I think so too.
So,
yes. This is a step in the right direction in terms of, you know, the people working in the industry.
Yeah.
I stand with this. And like you said, Get Realisms does as well.
It's such an easy industry for people to take advantage of others. It's just,
well, yeah, just like any other entertainment medium, you know.
What's the longest they have worked with? Sadly, the longest they ever worked with was on my own set. So but okay, I actually have a very bad one that I was like, that was actually on a union set that I couldn't believe. One of my worst experiences was on a union set. It was on the pilot of Urban Cowboy, and I was working as a PA. Obviously, I was non-union, and so they had an incentive to utilize the cheaper non-union people and to the max, because there wasn't much liability for them in terms of pay and whatnot. So I remember finishing a day at 2 a.m. in the morning, because we were waiting for Genie to wrap out and give us their time cards and all that stuff. We couldn't leave until they left. And our call time the next day was technically 5 a.m. But for me to get to that location by 5 a.m., I needed to be up by 3, because it was like an hour drive. That was stupid. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
And that happened on a union set, and I could not believe it. I had thought, oh, cool, I'm on a union set, it's going to be great because they have rules and stuff. But that was by far the worst experience I had. And people were just mad and angry and overworked and tired, and it just kept trickling down, you know. Seconds were angry because they didn't have any sleep. So they're yelling at the PAs. The PAs are yelling at each other because they're tired and cranky. And then the people on the top are yelling at the people on the bottom. So it was a very toxic, toxic environment. And I just remember that and being like, that this ceases to be funny more. Yet like, you're on the set and you're seeing like millions of dollars. I remember going to the craft services table and just seeing like the plethora of snacks there and thinking like, wow, this is literally the budget for my feature Fun Employment.
It's all on the snack table.
Yeah,
wow.
Besides that, sadly, but this was me willingly doing it, but like, I think I worked like 18 or 17 hour day on my film, but that was because I was doing everything.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Like, I think I've worked a 17 hour day I want to say we worked really long days on Fugitive, the one that we were on.
We were. It was pretty late.
But there was a
We had overtime, which helped. But yeah, no, we were working really, really long hours.
Well, it was just a turnaround. Like after wrap, it was like we only had a few hours because like the location would be
far away,
way too far away for a local Austin crew. You know, it was pretty far. But it was the same situation on a commercial I shot for a very reputable company that I will not name. it was basically that. It was just like, I was a PA. Everybody treated it like it was a professional set, but it wasn't like at all. We worked really long hours, and it was the same situation sort of where the turnaround was like 5-6 hours. And I remembered like pulling over to a gas station and like grabbing like I remembered like staring at like you know where the section is for like all the coffees and the energy drinks and stuff like that. I was literally staring at it for a good solid like 10 minutes without even noticing. I was just standing there just staring for a really long ass time, and then all of a sudden like I got a text message from like a whole bunch of people, and then like it was just like I was so asleep that I was asleep waking up, you know, like I had my eyes open and everything, but I was literally asleep. I was like sleeping like a goldfish. It was crazy. So it was very unsafe. That was a very, very unsafe working conditions. And there's plenty of sets, ladies and gentlemen, that are notorious for that, you know, depending on the set and the company and the clients and the director and whoever the production, but more times than not, sometimes you'll just you'd run into a shitty fucking production, you know, there's no way to say it.
It just boils down to it's just the standard. So if why does the corporate world say that it's a 9-to-5 and the business ends at 5. It's because if you go way past that, then it won't work for you because they'll go get a job that does end at 5. That is normal and all that stuff, you know, because there's a standard. And so, even if it's, hey, you're non-union stuff, that's the great thing about the unions is that they set they anchor the standard. And once there is a standard in place, people will want to adhere to that, or they will not get the quality of people that they need to work those jobs anymore. You know, you get to a certain point where, like now, I won't work if the rate is at a certain point, you know, because I know from what my experience is that like I'm at this rate. And it's the same thing. People who are at a certain caliber, at a certain point, will not work if they know they're going to be working 18-hour days.
Exactly.
15-hour days, because they know there's not going to be another set that's going to be a lot less stressful, that's going to be 10 hours, and they get overtime or something like that. So that's why the standard for that is so important.
Absolutely, it is important. Yes. I mean, and this is where, Like, I agree, because most businesses, like you say, have a 9-to-5 because that's just like,
that's the law.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of, that's just a law, you know, especially like, there's labor laws for a reason, you know, especially when you're in a workforce like retail or restaurant, you know, food service industry.
Right. It's like why their sweatshops are
And then that was a problem, especially for construction 50 years ago. You know, people had unregulated construction people just running around, and people would work in construction for like, you know, 17, 18, 20 hours a day.
Getting hurt.
Getting literally hurt, malnourished, you know, or not injured, malnourished, but lack of sleep, you know, fatigued easily. It puts a toll on your body, and that's why they created unions. That's why they have like regulations up the ass and stuff like that. Even though to a lot of people, it can be frustrating, especially to companies. Those standards are very frustrating because of money and time and yada, yada, yada. But yeah, I mean, if you want to get human about it, you're asking a human being to work more than what a human body is capable of working. You know what I mean?
Working. Yeah. No, that's the thing. It's interesting because I can see both sides and it's very difficult. Yeah, it can be frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. That's why, you know, there's like on my recent film, Ursley, I wasn't able to do SAG because I wasn't able to adhere to the standards that SAG has for its SAG actors. You know, I, for their, it was specifically because of the COVID, because of the pandemic, SAG has been rightfully so very strict with the number of testing there is for everybody. So it, they were testing every other day, you know, which when it comes to it is a giant chunk of change that a tiny, tiny, small budget film is not able to afford. So on being a producer, it's extremely frustrating, but I understand. And I hope that my future productions will be at that budget level and at that standard where I can adhere to that.
I do.
Do you see what I'm saying? So having that anchor is like something you can look forward to or work up to say I can be better and our productions can be better because it is important to be better, you know? So that's the why it's very much needed. So, but we'll see. I don't know how the voting process works or how long it's going to take or when it goes into effect, but if you're, you know, currently staffed on something and it's non-union, you don't have to worry. They're not, and they IATSE very much says they're not stopping all union work either. It's very specific with the studios that they're fighting with.
Right.
So I think they say like Hulu and Netflix, they're no like all fine. For the they had a list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like it was with the Alliance of, I can't remember what it is. But
Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers.
Exactly. Is that they're specifically fighting with. So if you're on a gig that's with that, then yeah, that'll affect
it'll work.
And that you'll have to, you know, pause work and strike. But for everybody else, it's just think of it as a positive that there's now they're trying to get a new anchor so that everybody has better work conditions. So we're getting too old for this shit.
We're getting too old for this shit, but also it's just like, this is to a lot of people, especially like this made it to Twitter too, by the way. And I found it interesting because earlier this week when this was like on the news and stuff like that, I remember going through hashtag IATSE, on Twitter, and I found truly fascinating shit. And it was just like people who just had no fucking clue. They're like, so wait, so like that's why like there's no standard, especially like Disney Plus and Hulu and Netflix and all these companies that are great companies, don't get me wrong, but they're just pushing all of these movies and all of these TV shows, and you're wondering how the fuck do they do this, like how do they make all this shit happen? And it's because
the loopholes. It happens all the time. It's like we're always trying, people are always trying to see where they can break the rules or where the rules aren't set, so that they can maybe save a little bit of money there or you know, but it's these loopholes. And anytime there's a new median, there's going to be a new movement to establish the new standard for that new median.
Right.
And, but the thing is like streaming has been around for a while and continuing to use that as an excuse to not pay people the proper rates or have better working conditions and is now at a point where it is legitimately just an excuse. So that's why IATSE is putting their foot down, you know? So it is becoming problematic. And it's, you know, the whole, it's in line with, it's a different thing, but with who's the actress that sued Disney Plus again? ScarJo. it's the same thing. It's a violation of a contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's backlash. People are like, well, she makes so much money anyway, and blah, that's blah, blah. That's not the point. You shouldn't. That's a, I see that as a super flawed logic, because you shouldn't penalize people just because they make the money that they make. There's a reason they make the money that they make. You know, they've worked their butt off to get to that point, to be able to make the money that they make. So the fact that they're fighting for a clear violation of their contract has nothing to do with, you know, oh, she's making a lot of money, why is she so greedy or whatnot? No, she's fighting for the fact that she works X amount, then her contract says this, and they did something different from that contract, you know? And so it's the same thing with the streaming platform. People are like, well, we're literally working the same amount for, we're creating content, the same kind of content, just because it's on a different streaming platform.
Right.
Doesn't give you the right to now take advantage of that and go around the rules and say, well, now we don't have to follow the rules, you know, essentially is what they're saying. Yeah. So, which is pretty effed up, but that's kind of human nature to do that. Like, oh, this is this new thing. We're in the Wild Wild West. There are no rules. So let's see how much we can take advantage of it until someone
puts it exactly down, you know? And I mean, these are businesses too, ladies and gentlemen. Like they're in the business of just cranking out more content for people to justify the monthly cost for whatever streaming platform that you have. But like there's gotta be like rational conditions when it comes to working on a production and a studio, you know, that who just only want to get as much content as they possibly can into their streaming platform for good reason. But to throw safety and caution out the window, that's where you kind of draw the line in the sand, right? And that's where not a lot of people know what's happening is because of this. And now that this is, there's some light shed on this, I feel like now people are sort of understanding that, oh yeah, no. Filmmakers, you know, there's some shit going on too. You know, we hear everything about the music industry and how crazy that is. You know, there's documentaries about it too, left and right. Every facet of entertainment gets screwed over in some shape or form, you know?
Yeah. I think people just overlook it because they see it as a dream.
And it is a dream.
And, oh, people are pursuing their dream. It is. It is. I feel every single day to be able to do what I love to do every single day. But that doesn't justify that because I do what and I work just as hard as somebody who, you know, is a doctor or whatever, that I am not entitled, I'm not given proper safety conditions, right? So, and that's, I think it's hard for people to wrap their minds, like, oh, you're just having fun, you know? And this is a job. Like, yeah, I love my job, and it makes me happy with my job, and it is creative, but people who love job and do creative stuff still deserve to have safe working environments and conditions. So, but yeah, you're exactly right. If it's hard for people to think about it, just about any other industry that has dealings, like you said, construction workers and, there's so many unions out there. I don't even know. It's the idea of setting standards so that, you know, it's harder to break rules and to make sure that everybody can work safely and they're not getting
it. Right. Yeah. So. And it was, you know, it's kind of the same thing with like what Amazon, well, not the same thing. Jesus Christ. What am I saying? But, you know, the workforce strikes happening in Amazon. You know, in some of these Amazon warehouses and stuff like that, which are justifiable as well. We don't need to get into it because it feels like everybody, it was shoved down our throats in every news outlet. But this is a like I said, a great step in the right direction for filmmakers and for people in the entertainment industry. Whoopsies. Well, Christine's out of the Zoom. Yeah, she's still here on Instagram, but yeah, no, it's okay. But yeah, what I was saying though was there's plenty of productions that are always going to try to adhere to every single rule, you know, and that's all we can strive for is to have a better and safe work environment, you know, especially for filmmakers, especially for, you know, actors and everybody
should be able to go to work safely and have safe conditions and make a living and survive and still have some sort of work life balance, you know. So
Was there anything else you want to talk about with IOTC or anything else really?
No, I think we'll I hope that's been for the most part my people's list for me are like, hey, I'm non-union, affect non-union workers, you know, and it's on the surface it doesn't, you know, we will continue to work like we usually do, but at a bigger long-term view into the future it will affect it in a positive way, because we're just trying to make sure that the standards match what new mediums are out currently, and that's all it is. And in terms of how it affects your work, if you're in a right to work state, nothing at all, you can still keep working, you won't get blacklisted because you're working, you should keep working. But how it affects it is if you are in IOTC, you are in the union, you are on a union gig, if you strike you will not work until negotiations come to play and we know what the new negotiations or the new conclusions are from those negotiations. And if you do decide to take a job and become a SCAB per se, that's when you would be blacklisted from the union. So I think that's what people are concerned about, like, oh well, if I'm a filmmaker now and I work on my film, will I get blacklisted? No. That you're in a right to work state, you're in a non-union gig, if you're biggest non-union, you'll be fine. But yeah, for the future, it will affect everything, hopefully.
Yeah,
for the
positive. I mean, there she said it, folks. That's that.
But we stand with IOTC in solidarity.
Title of episode 60 of
Yes, we stand with IOTC.
The Get Realisms podcast. Bye.